The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
At Lowe's, get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, install, and more when you spend $2,500 on select major appliances. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 2/25 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, Florida. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on Silver Drive in Columbus.
NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning into Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday Follow-Up for Season 18, Episode 4, where Bob spoke Delphi post-conviction with attorney Andrea Burkhart. From the grounds to appeal all the way to the path to a new trial, it was a great conversation and really informative. Bob and I are once again reunited with Janet, and the three of us have a lot to talk about. And if you're listening to this on Friday, today is the 9th anniversary of the Delphi murders.
Oh, that will be Friday, won't it?
Mm-hmm.
9 years ago. That's terrible. Oh, God, how has it been so long? Yeah, sorry, that threw me off. I didn't even think, I knew it was coming up, but I guess I hadn't looked at the calendar. Yeah, so hopefully you guys enjoyed the second half of the conversation. I thought it was a good way that we split them up with the trial stuff and the post-conviction stuff. And for me, the second half, the one this week, was really informative, more so than the first part. I was just really curious the stuff to different perspectives on the trial, but understanding like not only what's going on post-conviction, where the avenues are, and how the process can work was super interesting to me. And my favorite part was her breaking down and explaining what she would do if she was the judge, you know, with all of her legal background. I thought was really good. But for, I know we don't have a whole lot of questions, and I'll be honest with you guys, I've got, my brain is a real, I guess I'll just give a little bit of housekeeping right now. We've got the next three episodes figured out. Two of them are already recorded, which is always, as you guys know, always great for me when I, especially when the episode that's coming this Sunday is also about Delphi. The one coming this Sunday is a long, about an hour and 15 minute interview with Michael Osbrook, who's really getting into all the evidence that has been revealed since the trial ended. So where it was more procedural stuff with Andrea, Michael really gets into the nitty gritty about what's been done, what work's being done, what's been discovered. He also answers some of the questions that some of us had last week. And also, Michael is going to come on our follow-up with us next week. So you guys can ask him questions. Listeners live in the YouTube chat will be able to ask questions or ask him questions on the fly. So if you're listening to this now and you're going to hear Michael on Sunday, just check social media, check the YouTube channel, because either Monday or Tuesday night, we're not sure which one yet, at 8 p.m. Eastern time, we'll be recording the follow-up live with Michael Osbrook. So you'll be able to interact with him during that conversation. After that, based on a listener recommendation, I first listened to and then interviewed Stephanie Tinsley of the Everything They Missed podcast. And holy crap, so good. The podcast is so good. The conversation is so good. So that's going to be next week. And this Friday, I'm finally getting my chance to sit down and talk to and interview Chris Bynum. So that will be coming after that one. So we are actually going to get to hear from Chris Bynum himself from season 17. So That's all what's coming over the next 3 weeks. And I'm telling you that to let you know what's happening. Also, to explain why, if I sound like I'm talking about an episode that you haven't heard yet, that's why, because I'm confused.
Yeah. That's a lot to look forward to.
Yeah. So on that note, what were you guys' thoughts on this one? And Jan, anything you got to say about the last two? Because you weren't here last week.
Yeah. It's funny. I went back and listened to the first episode with Andrea and listened to your follow-up, the two of you together. And if memory serves, Michael was in that chat. He was in the chat. I can't remember if he's in the chat during the conversation with Andrea or if he was in the follow-up.
Yeah, it was with Andrea, I think. Yeah.
That's right. So, yeah, I love how kind of present he's been, and it is nice to have that sort of encyclopedia, human encyclopedia, to help guide you through when you have questions about stuff. But no, I thought it was really good. I really liked the kind of, I don't want to say spinning out because that sounds like a negative thing, but that piece of the conversation where you guys were kind of talking about the sort of fruit of the poisonous tree and kind of what you're studying right now in college, Bob, and kind of Andrea's perspective on it from an appellate perspective of the sort of idea of like that nebulous in between where it's kind of nobody knows exactly how much would get thrown away, how far back something would go. There's something that's kind of subjective and where judges differ on that and kind of what her expectation is like, okay, yes, technically, because the confessions came out of him being put into this environment, which came out of them finding the gun, which came out of them, you know.
Yeah.
It's all hard of to know that where stuff, you draw going the line. Backwards. Yeah. And that she was like, you know, from a semantic standpoint, like you could certainly make that argument, but that commonly courts just sort of draw a line at some point and are like, no, like we'll go ahead and count this. It's too valuable. Yeah. It's all very human, which is both scary and sometimes inspiring and interesting.
I'm curious, and that is because you put some thought into that. How do you feel about it? Where do you feel the line should be drawn?
I mean, boy, it depends. I'm speaking of being subjective. I'm afraid that my own humanity and my own opinions and biases will come into play. Like if it's something that I feel strongly about, that I feel very strongly that someone's guilty, I bet you I would find myself feeling like, No, they can't take it all the way back to that origin, because then this person might get away with it. Versus when it's a conviction I'm very uncomfortable with, suddenly I find myself going, well, I don't know. It sounds to me like you go back to round zero because you got to throw it all out. So I'm trying to be very mindful of where my biases are and kind of, again, like we always talk about, like you have to imagine a scenario working both towards something that would be a goal of yours and working towards someone else's goal that is the diametric opposition to what your goal would be, and think about fairness and think about like impartiality, you know?
What about you, Zach? Have you thought about it?
I mean, I think that's a great point. I mean, the bias of it, because, you know, let's say you come across a case and they work their way in on a way that's not legal, but then they find really hard evidence. You're like, oh, there's DNA. There's proof that this, you know, this guy committed or this woman committed this murder. Yeah, you're like, oh, well, fuck it. I want them charged. But again, something you're uncomfortable with, well, now you're way more present to throw the whole chain away, which is not, I don't know. That's a tough question to actually think about.
It's frustrating for me because I tend to try to be by the book as it is. But because I'm in these classes right now, everything's being thrown at me so black and white by the book, how it works. And there's two different doctrines that I've studied in one of my law enforcement ethics classes. And there's the fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine. And then there's also what they call the slippery slope doctrine. Mm. And kind of like what you said is like, one can lead to the other. And that's why I don't like it. I get really uncomfortable with it, because if it's like you said, they do something illegal, they violate somebody's rights, and, you know, they search without a warrant, whatever it is, they find something that then leads to something else. And then you're like, but they found this really hard evidence, so now we know the guy did it. Then your human side of you is like, we can't throw that away. The guy's a murderer. We found it. Mm-hmm. And then that's where the slippery slope doctrine comes in, because it's like, okay, but now you're looking at this circumstance. But but if we look at it big picture, are we okay with violating people's rights and then finding evidence to use against them? No, but we know he's, you know what I mean?
It's kind of like, if you think of it like a movie, sort of, it's like, who's the protagonist in the movie? If the movie protagonist is Clint Eastwood and he's just trying to, you know, get this guy who murdered this person, and you see him make a tough decision, but you're like, it's okay. I want him to go rogue because I know he's right. And he's doing the right thing. And sometimes you got to take the law into your own hands. Then you're like, I'm rooting for him. And then when it's a different movie and you see it's a bad cop and they're doing essentially the same thing, but you're on the side of the person who's being set up, you're like, well, that guy's a piece of crap. Like, how could he ever do that? So, yeah, subjectivity and like the story and who's telling the story. And I think, you know, Bob Mata, I believe is Bob, but it's certainly something that you hear a lot of defense attorneys say. They say, you know, don't get mad at the defense attorneys. Get mad at the police for not doing it right. Like, my job is to keep them in check so that they don't think they can do it wrong and still get the result that is what they wanted, whether it's quote unquote justice or not.
Well, I think a perfect example, if you go back and listen to that Andrew Collins interview that you did, he discusses a situation that's very identical to that. Before he was doing anything super shady, they were, I believe, serving a arrest warrant to go find an individual. And while they were in the house, somebody flipped a piece of paper over and there was cocaine.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, they weren't supposed to do that. But now they're going, well, we need to say that paper wasn't there and that cocaine was in the open.
Say that it was visible. Yeah.
You know, and they're trying to do the right thing, but in the process, you know, it's that slippery slope thing.
Yeah.
And it's just wild. But that's a real life example of it right there that, that we've heard of.
Yeah. And in this case, like, to me, the way, and I know it doesn't work this way, which is what frustrates me as my OCD self, is like, I feel like the fruit of the poisonous tree should, if there's a direct line of causation, like, it should eliminate everything. And to me, with Richard Allen's case, like, I don't see how you argue against it. I know they won't, but I don't see how you argue against it. So the biggest piece of evidence against him is a confession. The confessions came when he was incarcerated and in the conditions that he was in while he was talking to this prison psychologist. Well, why was he there? Well, he was there because they moved him into protective custody. Okay, so why was he in the jail to begin with? Well, he's in jail to begin with because they issued an arrest warrant citing the bullet that connected him. That was the, and if you watch the interrogation, and we played the audio last year, around 2024, of the interrogation videos of him, and it's very clear from the cops, like, they did not have enough to arrest him until they found that bullet. How'd they get the bullet? They got the bullet from the gun, from the warrant that if the Franks memo, the Franks hearing says that warrant was illegitimate, then to me, like, you can draw, like, you can very easily connect the dots. If they weren't able to search and find the gun, then that means they couldn't have matched the bullet, which means they couldn't have arrested him. That means they couldn't have put him in jail. That means they couldn't have put him in protective custody. That means he'd have never been talking to Monica Walla. And that means the confessions never happen.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Are you a fraud-paying American? It's a fact that one in four honest, hardworking, tax-paying Americans has been a victim of identity theft. With LifeLock Identity Theft Protection, though, if your identity is stolen, they fix it, guaranteed, and get you your money back. Last year, the IRS flagged over $16 billion in refunds for identity fraud. That's billions of dollars that could come from your salary, overtime, or second job. But this year, You don't need to stay a victim. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second for your personal information and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. And if your information does fall into the wrong hands, only LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists who are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. Because this tax season, fraud paying American is something no American should have to claim. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's 40% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Andrew's 100% right. I've never seen it play out that way.
Right.
But for me, just looking at the black and white of the standard, it's like, it shouldn't count. But again, this is a case where I'm uncomfortable with the conviction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, if I was like, this guy is 100%, you know, there's a mountain of other evidence and is 100% guilty, I guess I could see myself too being like, well, but then there's that slippery slope. Like, you have to apply it everywhere, not just where it's comfortable for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And this... Again, this case is so fascinating. And again, we always preface all of that, whether we're saying it out loud or not, with, and you said it in I think last week's follow-up, Zach, which is like, you get excited talking about this. That doesn't mean that anyone is overlooking what happened to Libby and Abby. In fact, it is something people are passionate about, because at the end of the day, even though many people are accused of not caring and only caring about the justice side, or, you know, the Richard Allen side of it, I choose to believe that every person who's passionate about it that I've ever encountered, whatever they believe, comes from a place of wanting justice for Abby and Libby. And I think it is very fascinating, because this is just such a crazy example of, you say, oh, if there was a mountain of evidence, then I would feel blank. And then there's someone somewhere saying, listening to you right now, saying, what are you talking about? There is a mountain of evidence.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a subjective perception of what they have. And I mean, every time I listen to anything about it, and that certainly includes these conversations, which I thought were so interesting, and it stays fascinating and very, very troubling, is how incredibly uncomfortable I am with the not knowing. Because I really don't know. I do not feel like I can say, of course he had nothing to do with it. I can't say that.
Well, I think we all have to agree. I think it doesn't matter if you believe Richard Allen is innocent, if you believe he's guilty, or if you're somewhere in between. I think we all have to agree how awful this investigation was. Clearly, I mean, they botched this investigation from the beginning. I mean, it was a disaster. And I truly think it was just as simple as them going, we got a video and this dude talking on a video. We're going to catch this dude tomorrow. And they just did nothing more than that.
I think back to watching it unfold on the news back in 2017, and I remember thinking, like, when we saw like the pictures from the, it's like, oh well, it's only gonna be a couple of days before they. I felt that way.
Yeah.
And then it was like, how have they not figured this out yet? There's a picture of the guy. There's a video of the guy. This can't be happening. And then one of the most frustrating things to me is, then when it's all over and we're all sitting here questioning, and like I said, we have longtime listeners who very much believe in wrongful convictions that are convinced he's guilty. There are some that are convinced he's innocent. My position is not guilty, which is not saying innocent, but it's saying I've seen no proof that I couldn't convict from my perspective. But to have all these questions still up in the air, and I think back to, you know, like Kelsey, who we've had on the show several times, and I've talked quite a bit with Kelsey, and like, just wanting so desperately for there to be justice for her and their families and Abby's family, and then you realize that this whole time, like, they refused to ask for the public's help, they refused to release any information, they kept everything. So we're thinking there's just like this intense, great investigation happening, and that's where they're keeping. And then you find out it's like that's what you were doing. You wouldn't ask for anybody's help. No one could help you. because you were so great and that's what you were fucking doing. That is something that frustrates me to no end, just because we've all seen how powerful using ordinary people can be. So many different podcasts, whether it's Wrongful Convictions or, I mean, everything from, think of, you know, Chris Lambert in Your Own Backyard to the Undisclosed Crew and all the convictions they've overturned, and Susan on Proof and Payne Lindsay, and all the different times where they've engaged the public, and that has solved decades old cold cases. There is power in engaging ordinary people, and they refuse to let that happen. And then we find out what they were doing was just completely inadequate.
Yeah. I mean, I think too, like, I understand the other side of it. I do understand the fear in the volume of tips that would be generated, the volume of, and, you know, in some cases on the internet sleuths, you know, fingering the wrong person and that person being persecuted and their lives being ruined. And so it's possible, you know, again, it's both. And you might get the thing that solves the case. You have to be willing to know that it's a different kind of risk to involve the public more heavily. And possibly that means, you know, oh shit, we're going to have thousands more tips coming in. We need help. We are going to have to ask for help. We are going to have to, you know, the FBI is going to have mercy and like help us weed through all these tips. And, you know, to really, I feel like some of that is the fear of, well, we're not going to be able to handle the volume of the public's involvement because we just can't look at everything. So let's just keep more close to the chest so that, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think there's a lot of decisions that were like,
ugh. And I was okay with that while frustrated when I thought they were doing a good job.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It was when they weren't doing a good job. And then you realize, oh, they did have the FBI and they kicked them off the case. They didn't want their help anymore.
I'm dying to know more about that. Like, there are so many things that we have these hints of, but then we don't exactly know the full scope.
It feels very much like they're just like pissing on fire hydrants. That they're like, this is our territory. Get out of here. We got it. We don't want help. Yeah. We don't want help from the FBI. We don't want help from the public. We got this. And they weren't capable of it. Because I think back to, I know that I always come back to Ron Logan, but that's only because from what I've seen, he seems like the best person of interest in the case to me, based on what I've seen in the file. And I always think like, what if there was more public and everybody knew that he was someone who was, you know, being looked into, or that this was, you know, within 6 months or a year of it happening? How many witnesses were there that saw him that day or talked to him, or, you know, that may have come forward that the police didn't know to go look for, and they didn't know to come forward because they didn't know the information they had was relevant? Those are the types of things that I always wonder about. Like, if, and there's a line, what do you share and what do you not share? But it's like, how many more people would have had information and still have information about this that didn't know what they knew was relevant because everything was kept so quiet?
Mm-hmm. You talk about what to share and what not to share. I've been thinking about this for a while. The video that they finally released, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning, they released a still photo. And then at one point, they released this weird 1 second clip of the video. And then at some point they released that little clip of the audio.
Right.
And you're thinking like, there's so much more.
Right. Whole time.
This whole time. And then when they finally released a video, there's nothing. I mean, it's the same. It's what you see, but they held this video so close to their chest. Like there was so much in it.
Yeah.
That it's like you made so much more work, and there's so much more that could probably be in that video or found in that video if you just released it at the beginning.
I always said my theory for the entire, all those years was the murderer has to be caught on audio on the video. Mm-hmm. And that's why they're not sharing it, because it's horrific. You know, like, so there's something horrific on it.
Right.
And then when it got released, it was like, it's 43 seconds long.
Yeah. Why like, just this tiny snippet? What were you afraid was going to happen by releasing just those pieces and not what was the reasoning behind that? I don't think we ever got a clear answer. If it was just out of respect for the victims, I completely understand that. Like, it's heartbreaking. The longer you spend with those girls on that video, the more devastating it is. But it certainly made me want this case to be solved even more.
Yeah.
You know, had I heard it earlier, it would have just put even more fire, you know, under people. I don't know. I don't know.
I wonder too, like if they had just shown like the uncut video, if there's someone who would have seen the little clip or was zoomed in and chopped up a bridge guy walking. Like what if there was somebody who saw like the original from far away and could just see it in real time and walking, that would have been like, hey, I know that guy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Instead of it feeling so obscured. Well, that kind of gets into, you know, some of the handful of questions that we have. You know, Dylan asked, why was the original investigation so lackluster before framing Richard Allen? If you think of it like that, was even a thought in their minds? And that's, yeah, I mean, that's a loaded question, Dylan, because obviously the implication there would be that they knew that they were framing. Framing is this kind of obvious, you know, attempt, like, well, we know this person isn't guilty, but we're making the concerted effort to book him anyway. And I don't know where, you know, where the truth lies in all of that. But
I think that if I was to frame it in a fair way, I would say that I think it was Andrea. This is where I may be mixing interviews. You know, just you can't deny the fact there was an election coming up when all of a sudden they got off their asses and made an arrest. And what I said in, I don't know, one or both or some of the interviews, I don't remember anymore. The thing that seems so incongruous to me is the level of detail and effort that was being made prior to going after Richard Allen, and how like those, like the effort being made once they decided it was him compared to the effort that was made for the years before that, they don't seem like they go together at all. So I wouldn't frame it as them framing Richard Allen, but I would say that there was the election seems to be the trigger to doing a poor job and not putting what I feel is the right amount of effort into it. And then once it came time to, we're going to make an arrest, then they decided now they're going to put, not to say now we're going to frame Richard Allen, but now we're going to put every effort and we are going to convict somebody. This is it. Like we're not going to stop until this is done. And personally, I think that Richard Allen was probably just a scapegoat, and if he's innocent, then he was in just an unfortunate. He just happened to be the guy when they were out of threads to pull on. You know, you had, you know, other suspects, like I said, Ron Logan, who I keep coming back to. He was dead. He'd been dead. You know, there's no satisfaction. They can't get a confession out of him. They didn't have enough evidence to convict anybody. They kind of needed the confession. You hear in the interrogations that we covered in depth a year ago that, you know, they were trying every trick in the book to try to get a confession out of Richard Allen before they arrested him.
Right.
Like they knew they needed a confession. And to me, I feel like that's part of the reason why later on, once they decided to shift into high gear in the investigation, there's no looking back and going back towards Ron Logan, because he was gone. They couldn't get a confession out of him. So they looked a different direction.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm trying to remember, like, you know, obviously they did investigate, they did ask for the FBI's help. The Odinism thing was something that was being explored. I think part of that seemed like it was so uncomfortable to certain law enforcement agents. Like it seemed so far-fetched and seemed so uncomfortable that it was like, well, nobody's going to believe us if we pursue this lead. Like this seems crazy, which is definitely a type of bias. And I agree that it seems crazy and far-fetched, but also, like, you don't know why someone might try to make it look like that, or why, you know what I mean? There could be reasons underneath the reasons, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like,
and Teresa points out in the chat that, you know, it's like they didn't have evidence because, like, there was, and this is what I mean by the lackluster nature of the investigation, or the, I think that's the word our listener used, was that it was lackluster, is like, in all this time, they never tested the DNA. Like never develop profiles.
Yeah,
you're telling everybody, you're telling the family, you're telling the public that you're no stone unturned. We're doing everything. And there was like this very obvious thing you could do and they didn't do it. Like I'll never understand that. No one will ever be able to explain to me a good reason why they didn't do that.
No, it's baffling.
Hey everybody, Bob here. I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted, completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work, and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pregame podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Back to this idea of, and I remember you read that question about someone saying you are perpetuating this idea of Richard Allen's total innocence by saying that he was being held in solitary and it wasn't solitary confinement, it was protective custody, and you know, you're part of the problem. I know that you answered that question last week, but it is something that keeps coming up for people, you know, that the opposite side of that coming from Dustin says, how is it legal that a non-convicted person can be held in jail and treated the way he was? And even in the chat here, I saw someone say, unrelated to me having this question already queued up from Facebook, that it wasn't jail. It wasn't jail. I mean, whatever you want to call it, we all know it was a prison. Like you, like that, it wasn't jail.
Yeah, and it very much was a prison. They moved him to a prison, and the answer to the question is, the way that they were able to get away with it is by claiming that it was for his safety. I mean, that's what was used. They didn't say, well, we don't like him. We think he's guilty. So we're going to move him to prison and we're going to put him in, you know, protective custody with solitary confinement conditions. You know, they said, oh, this is for his safety. He just won't be safe there. And I think the listener last week that had sent that, you know, was like, you know, they had to do that. There's no way they could keep him safe. Well, bullshit. Do your fucking job. It's literally your job to make sure that the prisoners are safe. And if the county jail there if their position is, we can't stop inmates from beating the shit out of each other and killing each other, well, then you need new leadership in that prison or in that jail, because that's literally your job. Your job is to house people. Some people are, get sentenced to jail time, but primarily your job is to house people who have not been proven guilty until they're tried, and your job is to keep them safe. So if your position is we are incapable of doing that, then I don't accept that. Then everybody in that prison needs to be, or in that jail needs to be fired, and new people need to come in. And I've seen it. Is any of you? I'm not going to wait for the answer, but I'll just say this. I used to watch a show called 60 Days In. I don't know if anybody else has ever watched it, but it was where they were. And I feel like Carroll County was one of the jails that they. I could be wrong about that. Maybe Zach could look that up, what jails. But I feel like I want to say, because I remember it was one that wasn't far from here. But they would put plants into the jails, and they would have hidden cameras all over the place. And it was, the idea was the wardens were trying to see, where drugs were coming in and where their weak points were. And I just remember watching that show, and it was just like, how is this? How do you guys think this could possibly be safe? Because in all of the ones that the seasons that I watched, because it would go on for a whole season with the same people in there that are like undercover, and they're just ordinary people that signed up to do this. There was always like a big open communal area with cells lining the outside wall, and like it would be all day. Like in the morning, the cell doors would open, and everybody just hung out in this huge communal area.
It was Clark County.
Clark County. Okay, so not Carroll County. And you would see like people would get beat down, and they would just like, it would happen in the common area, or they would always just like go into a jail, into a cell where there weren't cameras, and you'd watch it like on video, it playing out. And the whole time, all I was thinking constantly was, if you just put one guard who was stationed in that communal area at all times, none of this would happen. None of it. They leave them completely unsupervised, just with cameras that apparently nobody is monitoring. And this, and it's just like, how do you not see that? The warden is putting all this energy into trying to figure out, how could we possibly stop all this violence from happening? Put a fucking person in there. Like it's mind-boggling to watch it. Anyway, that's just a little aside to something that I thought of when I thought of like keeping people safe in the county jail. And I know these violent things happen, but anyway, long answer to a short question. The short answer is, legally they got away with it by claiming that it was for his personal safety.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of I've made my opinion very known on what I think would happen to me if I were mm-hmm. isolated in an environment like that. I have little to no confidence in my mental health, like in that environment. Yeah. Right now, today, I feel pretty good. Feel pretty good.
Yeah.
Put me in a situation like that where I am being accused of something. Let's say I'm innocent. I just don't know. I don't know.
It
wouldn't take much to break you. It wouldn't take much to break you. And yes, Tool Girl, just to acknowledge some of the points you're making, I feel like I blew my stack about the ballistic stuff. I remember I like was shouting at one point. I was so upset about that particular approach. Because again, anything like that is just like, boy, it's like you want me to think he didn't do it. Like you are trying to prove a case, and I feel like you're working hard to make me doubt you.
Yeah.
It's,
and by the way,
crazy.
Regarding that question too, if you were really concerned about his safety, you know what you could have done? You could have released him on bail with an ankle monitor where you track his GPS location and confine him to his house, and he would have been perfectly safe. Remember, he was not guilty at the time.
Chrissy says, I am curious about who the judge would be if the errors found are enough to get Richard Allen a new trial. I think that we previously thought if he got a new trial, it would go back to Judge Gall, but since she is retiring, would a new judge be assigned?
It would be a new judge. I don't have any idea who that judge would be, though.
Yeah. Well, that kind of goes back to what Andrea was saying, which was like, I can't answer that for Indiana. I can tell you what I think I could get done in my area as the attorney I am, knowing the judges and DAs I know. Bunch of human beings. We're all just a bunch of human beings.
But I think that's a good point. As you say that, I think that's a good point. to look at it both sides. Look at both sides of what she said. She said, I do not know because this is not my home court. I do not know these players. But if I was in my home court on my home field, I know all the players and I know how to present it to them.
Yeah.
Right? It's that human being aspect, right? Mm-hmm. It's not the legality aspect of it. It's how you present it as a human.
Yeah.
That's what I caught out of that. Not saying that she's not presenting it legally. I'm just saying, like, if it was just straight black and white on paper, you should be able to present it to anybody anywhere.
Yeah. If the law was just the law, but that's the whole, you know, the problem is the whole purpose of a judge is to interpret the law in real time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all going to interpret it differently.
Look at the conversations we have about the Supreme Court justices. Everyone knows.
Yeah.
Like, this person tends to feel blank. This person tends to interpret it in this completely different way. This person sometimes seems like they're just in a bad mood. Like, there's,
right, yeah.
You know, there's a lot of humanity there. And, you know, does anyone want us to turn it over to AI? Like, not me.
No.
So, I don't know.
I'll give it 5 years. We'll see.
All right. Okay.
There's literally a movie about that, like, coming out right now, or it's out right now with Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, yeah. And I'm always interested in, like, how science fiction handles kind of what they...
Could you imagine
they see things going?
A judge's opinion that was written by AI with all the hallucinated and fake citations and
everything. I can imagine that.
Yeah.
Sci-fi movie called Mercy. Sorry. About legal system. For it.
And I think I don't know. I feel like those are questions that are coming. Those are questions that will be coming about all of that. Just to circle back to the DNA real quick to make sure that Laura fully gets an answer. What is known about the DNA in terms of what was tested and what wasn't? They said the DNA was not a match to Richard Allen, but also that what they did have was too degraded to try to match to anybody else. A lab like Othram can do a lot with very little degraded DNA. And in Indiana, can the defense request that more DNA be analyzed?
I'm going to save that question because Michael Osberg and I talk about that in length in Sunday's episode. So we'll wait for that.
Okay, great. And then Josh Bushi, I don't know why I chose to say your last name, but no one else is. Josh, I'm sorry. I put that on you. I think it just like looked like a French word and I like French. Andrea's commentary on the supposed Ron Logan confession to, Reese Davis?
Reese. Yeah.
Didn't Reese originally state that A, Richard Allen was involved along with the owner of the Anthony Schatz profile, and B, that Baldwin, I guess Andy Baldwin, right, was pressuring him to lie? Don't agree with the detention conditions, but not sure of any of the Reese info can be trusted. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not aware of that stuff. It doesn't mean it's not true, but this is what I have found compelling about the Reese Davis letter is the original letter where we get all the information from about what he says Ron Logan said was sent to the prosecutor before Richard Allen was on the radar, before Baldwin was involved, and more importantly, before anyone knew the manner of death of the girls. Those are the big things to me. So like things may have gotten warped and twisted later once the defense got involved and they were preparing for trial and stuff. But the thing that to me that I just can't get past is he told the prosecutor that Ron Logan told him this list of things that no one could have possibly known and turned out to be accurate before any of this other stuff ever happened. So to me, it's the content and the timing of the initial reporting that I find to be so compelling. Now, would he have been a good witness on the stand at a trial in 2024 if these other things were going on and he had made other statements and there was accusations of the attorneys pressuring him? Again, I'm not aware of those things. Doesn't mean they didn't happen. But they also don't really matter to me because the thing that I find compelling is that original letter that he wrote way back before any of that would have occurred. And in the original letter, it's very clear. I mean, it doesn't get more guilty knowledge than what was written into that letter when no one should have known those things.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and
does that ring a bell to either of you guys?
No, I mean I know what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about, and I really had
I mean, do you know what the listener's talking about as far as like accusations of Baldwin asking him to lie and him saying that Richard Allen was part of it? Does that ring a bell to either of you guys?
No, I don't.
It doesn't. That doesn't mean.
I was
that
trying
it
to
wasn't...
find information on it.
Oh,
right
thanks,
now.
Zach. Yeah, because I no, I'm sorry. I also do not remember that. Which isn't to say that none of that happened. Because I that's what I was about to say was I'm not. I would need a full refresher on all of the Reese stuff. Because when initially we heard that there was something that had come in from a fellow inmate about anything, my heart just kind of sank.
Yeah.
Because I was like, here we go. Yeah. And that was my bias that I took into listening to, you know, that story. But if it's as black and white as this was accurate, eerily accurate, and couldn't have come from anywhere else, that's compelling. I mean, you strip it down, that's compelling.
And I very well could be wrong, but given the fact that, like, I've never heard it. None of the three of us have heard about it. And we've called the case a lot. And even Zach's searching for it, can't find anything on that.
So I guess in his original account in the confession, he says that Klein, Allen, and Logan did it together. The three of them, Keegan, Klein, Richard Allen.
Where is that source? Because I've read the actual letter and it doesn't say
This is from an article online. This is from Fox 58, 59.
Okay. Hmm. Yeah, so my guess is probably some other jailhouse niche came and said something like that. I don't know. All I have to work on that I'm basing my opinion on is the original actual written letter that we discussed right back when the trial was going on.
Well, that's something that we can broach with Michael, although I'm sure naysayers will say that he will say whatever he wants. I mean, I don't feel this way, but I'm saying.
Yeah.
Once you've been accused of, well, he's on the side of Richard Allen, he's going to say whatever helps Richard Allen
which
out.
Which is crazy to say about Michael Osberg because he doesn't have any skin in the game other than the truth.
Yeah, that's the idea. That is all we have from stuff that rolled in on Facebook. I'm just looking through some of the comments. And Zach, I don't know, you look like you're hard at work looking through something too. So if you have anything that you want to bring up and add.
So I've just pulled up a PDF file that is handwritten from, and it does seem to name Richard Allen in here.
Really? From the, was it that original letter to the prosecutor?
This is, I mean, a handwritten, pops to visit me. It's hard to go through all this and it's very hard to read on the spot because it's very poorly handwritten.
We'll circle back to it next week because I want to look at that too because I'm curious because a few things pop in there that, you know, if he had brought up Richard Allen early, that would be interesting. But the fact that Keegan Klein, like, to me, that seems like that had to have come out after those guys were.
Anthony shots.
Yeah. Yeah. That would, because, I mean, I don't think anybody thinks that Keegan Klein was actually involved in this.
Right.
And like for this person that happened to be the big publicly known suspect as part of this letters. But we'll look at all that later. And I know we got some stuff in the chat. But we've been going for about 40 minutes, so I think we'll go ahead and we've got more stuff to cover. We'll go ahead and wrap this up for now. Again, we have Michael Osberg coming back on Sunday, and that's a long conversation. I was on with him for, I think, over an hour, so that'll be coming up in Sunday's episode, so make sure you tune in for that. And again, Michael is going to be joining us with us in the follow-up next week, so pay attention to either the YouTube channel or social media on Facebook when we post it. It'll either be Monday or Tuesday evening if you want to be in the live chat with Michael. Make sure you join us there. And with that being said, we're going to go ahead and wrap this up, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @TruthJusticePod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney. And Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.